Okay, thanks for coming, and thanks for the opportunity for me to be here, talk about several of my works during my PhD. And those works collaborate with Mike Hermley, Xie Chen, Ethan Lake. The topic of this talk is about mechanisms of fractal phases. It's a new type of phase of matter supporting new type of excitations called fractals. Quantum phases of matter are originally classified by symmetry breaking within Landau's paradigm. And it was believed that there are only symmetry breaking state and a symmetric state. And the phase transition between them is characterized by order parameter. For example, in the superfluid state, the global U1 symmetry is broken, and we can define the order parameter as superfluid density. When the order parameter decays to zero, then it says the system goes into a symmetric state. But later, there is a new discovery of new phase of matter called a spin liquid. And it is a phase of matter beyond the Landau's paradigm because there's no obvious order in this type of phase. But there are many exotic properties of this phase of matter attract people to study it. There are gapped spin liquid and gapless spin liquid. Gapped spin liquid are also called the topological order because they have some topological properties. For example, if we put a system on the topological non-trivial manifold, there will be non-trivial ground state degeneracy depending on the topology of the manifold. And there are also gapped topological excitations. Also, in the gapless spin liquid, there can be gapped topological excitations or gapless topological excitations. Also, there is new type of criticality called deconfined criticality also support the topological excitations. So the topological excitation in those phases of matter are usually called fractionalized excitations. So they are fractionalized excitations because they are different from an elementary particle formed system. For example, in the one-third of fractional quantum Hall state, the elementary particle forming the system is elementary electron, but the excitation can be one-third of electron. And those fractionalized excitations are coupled to emergent gauge field. There can be U1 gauge field, Z2 gauge field, and so on. Particularly in two-dimensional system, the gapped fractionalized excitations are also called anions. They are point-like excitations. And the braiding process between two point-like anions would generate non-trivial topological phase factors as long as the braiding path is topological non-trivial, which means it cannot be shrunk down to one point. And also, the anions are free to move. So this is a property we always ignore. But since today I'm going to talk about the fractal physics, this is very important for anions in the ordinary topological ordered phases. And the fractionalization can be generalized into three-dimensional system. However, there are no point-like anions in three-dimensional system because any breeding path is topological trivial. So there are only bosons or fermions as point-like excitations in three-dimensional system. But we can have non-trivial breeding between loop excitations and point-like excitations. Besides those excitations, what I'm going to introduce is the new type of point-like excitations called the fractals. They live in three-dimensional system, but they cannot move without creating or moving other excitations. And fractals are also topological excitations because they cannot be created along by local operators. But different from ordinary topological excitations, the fractals are always created in more than two. For example, we can create four fractals at one time at the corner of a membrane operator. Or we can create like four fractals at the corner of a fractal operator. Besides fractals, there are also new excitations called subdimensional excitations. They are mobile excitations, but only move in subdimensional space in the whole system. Sometimes people use subdimensional excitations also refer fractal because fractals are zero-dimensional excitations. But in this talk, I only use the subdimensional excitations to refer those mobile excitations. Fractals are firstly discovered in an exact-solvable model called Hart's cubic code. So this is a spin model living on three-dimensional cubic lattice. And each side has two spins on it. The Hamiltonian is a summation of X term and Z term. And each term is a product of X operator or Z operator involved in one cube. This Hamiltonian has a very exotic property. If we put the system on the three torus, then we will get non-trivial ground state degeneracy, depending on system size. This is different from ordinary topological ordered phases. And also, we can act one Z or one X operator on one side to create excitations. There are four excitations created at one time, created at the corner of a fractal operator. The four excitations can be separated apart by acting larger fractal operator among them. But single excitation cannot move, so each excitation is an immobile fracton. And the bound state of any fracton is also immobile excitations.
Redefine the Hamiltonian.
Hamiltonian, yeah.
It's multi-spin operator.
Yes, the first term, the Z term, is a product of all of those Z operators in this cube. And the X term is the product of X operator in this cube. And we have, like, throughout all the cubes in the three-dimensional cubic lattice. Yes. And there are, besides Haas cubic code, there are various 3D discrete fractal models proposed in these years. Some of those models are different from Haas cubic code. They have both fractons and the mobile subdimensional excitations. For example, one-dimensional particle only allowed to move along one line, or two-dimensional excitations. According to the property of those excitations, we can classify the 3D discrete fractal models into two types. The type 1 models have both fractons and the subdimensional excitations. And those excitations are created at the corner of rectangular membrane operator. And also we have type 2 model, like Haas cubic code. There are only fracton excitations exist in the system. And the excitations are created at corner of fractal operator. And the discrete fracton model exhibits fracton topological order. We give it this name because it shares some property with ordinary topological order. Firstly, it has a gap from ground state to excited state. And it has fractionalized excitations carrying non-trivial topological charge. Besides those two properties, the fracton topological order has new properties. Firstly, it has sub-extensive ground state degeneracy. If we were to put it on a topological non-trivial manifold, the degeneracy depends on the system size. And secondly, the fractionalized excitations are either fracton or subdimensional excitations. Due to these two new properties of fracton topological order, the ordinary topological quantum field theory cannot describe it. So we need some new theory or mathematical structure to describe this order. But so far, we don't have any appropriate theory to describe it. So we can only study it from different perspective. Before I go into the main point of my talk, I now introduce another fracton phase called the gapless fracton phase. Those phases are found in several U1 fractal models. Those models are proposed several years ago, but only recently it was realized that fractons are gapped excitations of those U1 models. Those U1 models are actually U1's lattice U1 symmetric tensor gauge series, different from ordinary U1 gauge series where the gauge variables are vectors. In these gauge theories, the gauge variables are higher rank symmetric tensors. For example, in three-dimensional system, a rank 2 gauge theory has electric field and gauge field. Both of them are 3x3 matrices. Since they are symmetric matrices, there are 6 independent variables in each tensor, and each variable is a U1 variable. Similar to the ordinary U1 gauge theory, the each component of the electric field is conjugate with the corresponding component of the gauge field. We can write down the Hamiltonian for the gauge theory in the Euler form, E squared plus B squared, and the B is a gauge invariant tensor. In order to write down the form of the B, we need to know the Gauss law of the electric field. Since there are extra components in this electric tensor, we can have unconventional Gauss laws. These unconventional Gauss laws lead to gapped fractals or subdimensional excitations. So I will give two examples of these unconventional Gauss laws in next slide. In the low energy limit, there are only gapless photon modes defining the stable fixed point, which we call it gapless fractal phase. Now, I would like to give the first example. It's called the vector charge theory. In the Gauss law, one of the indices of the electric field is contracted, giving us vector charge. Because of this Gauss law, there are two conservation laws for the vector charges. One is the charge neutrality as usual, and the other one is the angular charge moment neutrality. And in order to understand these conservation laws concretely, we put the theory on the three-dimensional cubic lattice in a way that diagonal components are pulling on the other side, and off-diagonal components are at the center of each plaquette. So each side has three components of electric field, and plaquette has one off-diagonal component. If the plaquette is on the xy plane, then we will have Exy or Axy at the center of that plaquette. By adding one to each component of the electric tensor field, we are able to create charge excitations in the system. There are the only possible charge patterns can create it in the system. We can see these two charge patterns satisfy both conservation laws. This means the vector charge, the motion of vector charge is constrained by this conservation law, because as we can see here, the single vector charge can only move along its vector's direction, but it cannot move along the perpendicular direction. Also, from this Gauss law, we can write down the gauge transformation of this theory, and then we can write down the gauge invariant tensor. Another example is called the scalar charge theory. Now we contract both indices of the electric tensor, give us a scalar charge. And this Gauss law gives us two conservation laws. One is the charge neutrality, and the other one is dipole neutrality. By putting on the theory on the three-dimensional cubic lattice in the same way, we are able to look at its possible charge patterns. It turns out that there are the only two possible charge patterns created in the system under these two conservation laws. The one is the square charge pattern, the other one is the linear charge pattern. Due to those two possible charge patterns, we can see that each charge is immobile. They are fractals, because moving single charge will break the dipole conservation law. But the dipole can move either perpendicular to its dipolar direction or along its dipolar direction. So the dipoles are fully mobile in the three-dimensional system. According to the Gauss law, we can write down the gauge transformation and gauge invariant tensor. Now this gauge invariant tensor is not symmetric, but it's traceless. So I will go back to this theory later when I talk about the relation between those phases. So after I introduce all of those, the fractals, fractal topological order, and the gapless fractal phases, we have tons of questions about them. Firstly, what's the relation between fractal topological order and the ordinary topological order phases? Secondly, what's the relation between the fractal topological order and the U1? Gapless fractal phases, and so on. Part of those questions are answered by those large amount of papers, but today I'm going to focus on the first two questions which we have done in these two papers. This is the outline of this talk. So I'm going to talk about the relation among four different phases of matter, fractal topological order, 2D topological order, 3D topological order, and the U1 fractal phase. So particularly, the fractal topological order exhibit in the XQ model, I will introduce it later, can be constructed by couple layer construction from 2D toric-coat layers. And then there is a particular relation among scalar charge theory, 3D toric-coat, and XQ model. So firstly, let's discuss the couple layer construction. So in order to be self-contained, I will briefly review the toric-coat and XQ model. Toric-coat is an exact-solvable model on two-dimensional square lattice. Each link has one spin, Z2 spin. And the Hamiltonian is a summation of X term and Z term. X term is a product of 4X operator around one plaquette, and Z term is a product of 4Z operator connecting to one vertex. When we put this system on a two torus, then we will get fourfold ground state degeneracy. By acting one Z or X operator on one link, we are able to create two M particles and two E particles. They are fully mobile in the two-dimensional system. So the braiding process between those anions are...
What do you mean they're mobile? Because they don't have any dynamics here.
Yeah, they don't. But we can add a string operator connecting to them to let it move around. Yeah. So the braiding process between those anions are well-defined. We can check the E particle and M particle are self-bosons, and they, E particle and M particle have mutual Simonic statistics. And the toric-coat can be generalized into a three-dimensional system. The Hamiltonian is the same, the plaquette term, vertex term. Now differently, the M excitation is now loop excitation. But the braiding statistic between the loop excitation and point-like excitation is well-defined, give us a mutual Simonic statistics. And it also has non-trivial ground state degeneracy on the topological non-trivial manifold. Now, let me introduce the XQ model, which is the simplest fractal model. It's also an exact solvable model. And it's a Z2 spin model living on three-dimensional cubic lattice. Each link has one Z2 spin on it. And the Hamiltonian is a summation of X term and Z term. Now the X term is a product of all the 12 X operators involved in one cube. And the Z term has three types of vertex terms living on X, Y, Y, Z, Z, X plane. Each Z term is a product of 4Z operators connecting to one vertex on one plane. By acting one Z operator on one link, we are able to create four cubic excitations. Those cubic excitations can be separated apart by acting membrane operator among them. So single excitation is immobile. It's a fracton. But the bounded state of two fractons can move in a two-dimensional plane perpendicular to their connecting line, as shown in those two purple cubic excitations. Also, we can act one X operator on one link, create two excitations at the end of this link. It seems that this excitation is connecting to a string operator. However, this string operator is a rigid string operator, which means it cannot turn without creating excitation at the turning point. This means the excitation is a one-dimensional particle. It can move only along one-dimensional line without creating or moving any other excitations. Although being one-dimensional excitation and a fracton, they can have well-defined mutual statistics. The braiding process can be accomplished by wind the bounded state of two fractons around the one-dimensional particle. As long as the fracton, one of the fracton and the one-dimensional particle is on the same layer, on the same plane, then we will get pi phase factor. And this means the fracton and the one-dimensional particle has mutual Simonic statistics. If we put the system on the three torus, we will get this ground state degeneracy depending on the system size. Okay, so we know the XQ model has Bretton topological order. And the most mobile excitation in the XQube model is the two-dimensional excitation. So we can ask a question, is the XQube model related to two-dimensional topological order state in a way that it's just a stack of 2D topological order? Because in this way, we can provide the two-dimensional excitation in the three-dimensional system. However, this simple construction doesn't work because in this way, we cannot create any fractal or one-dimensional excitations. So the XQ model is not just a stack of 2D topological order layers. So how about intersecting layer? If we have two intersecting layers of topological order state, then we can have a bounded state of two anions from different layer form a one-dimensional particle only move along the intersecting line. And also we can have three intersecting layer, and the bounded state of three anions can be a fractal living at the intersecting point forever. In this way, we can generate lower dimensional excitations, but this is still not the X-cube model, because simply we can see why this is the case from the ground state degeneracy of the X-cube model. In this ground state degeneracy, there is a universal number, which means it cannot be generated by those decoupled layers. So we indeed need couplings between those layers to construct the truly 3D X-cube model. So now I would like to present how to get the X-cube model from coupling toric-coupled layers. The setup is three stack of toric-coupled layers around x, y, z direction. In this way, we get two z2 spins on each link. Then we can impose the coupling term on the two spins per link to get a truly 3D model. Now, the coupling we choose is the zz coupling term. In the strong coupling limit, the two z operators on one link are identified to each other, and the two x operator on one link are combined to be a new x operator conjugated to this z operator. In the strong coupling limit, the lowest order term from degenerate perturbation we can get is the cubic term, which is a product of all the new x operator involved in one cube, commuting with this coupling term. And in the presence of this coupling term, the z term doesn't change because they commute with each other. So we only need to replace the old z operator by the new z operator to get the vertex term in the XQ model. So mathematically, we can see the in the strong coupling limit, we get exactly the same XQ model by coupling the toric-coupled layers. Physically, we can understand this couple layer construction in the following way by considering the wave function in the weak and the strong coupling limit. In the weak coupling limit, the ground state wave function is just a ground state wave function for the decoupled toric-coupled layers. By acting the coupling term onto the wave function, onto the ground state, we would generate loop excitations. And those loop excitations are made up from point-like excitations from each toric-coupled layers. By tuning the coupling larger and larger, those loop excitations cost less and less energy and finally becomes a part of the ground state wave function of the XQ model in the strong coupling limit.
In the toric code, the wave function can be thought of as string net condensed state.
Yes.
What happens?
But here the loop is not the loop condensate in the toric code. Those loops are formed by excitations from the toric-coupled. Because we add coupling term onto the toric-coupled layers, right? We create some excitations.
So the string nets are disturbed and then they pick up in some sense.
So
they create excitations.
They create excitations, and here we only consider those excitations. We don't consider the string net. We don't consider wave function of the toric-coupled, how to write that. We only consider how to write the ground state wave function for the X-cube model. Yes.
In the understanding of the wave function, very important, help you to understand the wave function, coupled system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now the purpose is to understand the wave function for the coupled system. In terms of the excitations in the toroid, yeah, it's different from the string.
It's similar as the hierarchical structure. Basically, you condense the excited objects.
Yes, yes. So the ground state wave function of the XQ model can be write as a loop condensate. We also call it particle loop condensate because those loops are made up from excitations from the toroid layers. And due to this construction, we can understand the XQ model in terms of degrees of freedoms in the toroid layers. And firstly, we can look at the excitations in the XQ model. By acting one Z operator on one link, in the weak coupling limit, we are able to create two M particles on one layer. But in the strong coupling limit, this operation gives us four fractons at one time. And this identifies the bound state of two fractons to one M particle. This explains why the bound state of two fractons is a two-dimensional particle moving on this plane. Also, we can act a 2x operator on one link because this commutes with the coupling term. And in the weak coupling limit, this gives us four E particles on the perpendicular layers. And the same operation gives us two one-dimensional particles in the strong coupling limit. This means one-dimensional particle is a bounded state of two E particles from the perpendicular layers. This reminds us about the intersecting layer construction, that the bounded state of two anions from different layers become a one-dimensional particle only moving along the intersecting line. Also, we can look at the membrane operator in the XQ model. If we want to separate those cubic excitation, the fracton excitations, then we act membrane operator among them. Equivalently, in the weak coupling limit, we act a stack of string operators between stack of M particles. So this identifies the membrane operator as a stack of string operators from toroid layers. Because of this identification, we can compute the ground state degeneracy of the XQ model in an easy way. In the weak coupling limit, suppose we have 3L toroid layers, then we will have 2 to 6L degenerate ground state because there are 6L non-contractible loop operators contributed to the ground state degeneracy. In the strong coupling limit, there are three constraints imposed on those 6L loop operators. For example, the product of loop operators along Z direction on ZX planes is equal to the product of loop operators along Y direction on XY planes. So in total, there are three constraints give us this 6L minus 3 ground state degeneracy of XQ model. So in this result, we can see it depends on system size, but it's not just the ground state degeneracy of decoupled toroid layers. We need a coupling to get the XQ model. Finally, we can look at the semionic mutual statistics between fracton and one-dimensional particle. By winding the bound state of two fractons around one one-dimensional particle, we get a topological phase factor. So this process is equivalent to wind the one M particle around one E particle on the same layer. So this will certainly give us pi phase factor, which means the semionic mutual statistics in the XQ model originates from the semionic statistics from one toroid layer. Okay, in this way, we study the couple layer construction for the XQ model. By coupling the toroid layers, we found the connection between fracton topological order and 2D topological order. Now, I would like to start from another perspective, from the U1 fractal phase to get the 3D topological order and the fractal topological order in the X-cube model. Starting from the U1 scalar charge theory, we are able to have two paths, two different paths to realize the fractal topological order in the X-cube model. The first path is firstly by doing the Higgs mechanism to get the Z2 scalar charge theory, and then doing the so-called partial confinement transition, then finally get the fractal topological order. And this, in the second path, we just switch the two steps in the first path by doing the partial confinement transition first, and then Higgs mechanism. Remember, we put the U1 scalar charge theory on three-dimensional cubic lattice in the way that diagonal element on the side, off-diagonal element on the plaquette. Now we do the Higgs mechanism. So all of those variables become Z2 variables, and the charges become Z2 charges. So there's no difference between plus charge and minus charge. And minus 2 charge is just a vacuum. So after Higgs mechanism, we get these two charge patterns, the square pattern and linear pattern. From this pattern, it means the point-like excitations can now move along any direction, but with even number of lattice spacing. So we expect ordinary Z2 gauge theory after the Higgs mechanism. However, this point-like excitation can never go to its nearest neighboring site. This means we expect several copies of Z2 gauge theories in this Higgs Z2 scalar charge theory. Now we write down the Hamiltonian of the exact solvable point for this Z2 scalar charge theory to check our expectation. By writing down the Gauss law and gauge invariant tensor in the Z2 scalar charge theory, we are able to write down the Hamiltonian as a summation of X term and Z term. The X term now is a product of 18 X operators as shown in the figure. And each Z term is a product of 4 Z operators around one link or around the center of each cube. By acting Z or X operator, we are able to create excitations. By acting diagonal Z operator on one side, we are able to create two point-like excitations away from each other by two lattice spacing. And this reproduces the linear charge pattern when we Higgs the U1 scalar charge theory. And also, we can act one off-diagonal Z operator on one plaquette, and this gives us four excitations at the corner of the membrane operator. And together, these two charge patterns, we can identify there are four different point charges in the system. And also, by acting X operator, we create loop excitations. There are four types of different loop excitations. We can thread those point-like charges one by one through those loops, and the topological phase factor we obtain can use to identify the loop type and charge type, because certain charge and certain loop has mutual semiotic statistics. So in this way, we have checked our expectation that the Z2 scalar charge theory is four copies of Z2 gauge theory. And also, we can compute the ground state degeneracy of that Z2 model. It gives us a constant, which also supports the fact that Z2 scalar charge theory is four copies of ordinary Z2 gauge theory. Okay. From this Higgs mechanism, we can see the Higgs mechanism actually lose the immobility of fractals in the U1 scalar charge theory. And we get a fully mobile ordinary gauge theories in the Z2 scalar charge theory. So we need extra step to get the fractal topological order in the XQ model. So this step, we call it partial confinement transition. So before I talk about how to get the XQ model, I talk about simpler example for the partial confinement transition. And this transition realized the dimension reduction from 3D toric code to 2D toric code. In the three-dimensional toric code, we can condense the loop excitations between layers, for example, the red loop in this figure. And due to this condensation, the E particle cannot hop from one layer to another layer because it has non-trivial mutual statistics between with those loop condensate. And also the M loop in the original 3D model now reduced to two M particles at the intersecting point because other part of the loop can be absorbed into the condensate. It doesn't cost any energy. So in this way, we reduce the three-dimensional toric code into 2D toric code layers. So this is the simpler example for partial confinement transition. Now let's do the same thing in the Z2 scalar charge theory. We condense the loop excitations on every plane. In this way, the original point-like excitations cannot move because it read non-trivially with those loops, with those condensate. So the point-like charge becomes a fracton, immobile fracton. And the bounded state of two fractons can still move, but in a two-dimensional plane, because only in this way, the motion will not give us non-trivial topological phase factor. On the other hand, the loop excitations in the Z2 scalar charge theory reduced to two point-like excitations because other part of the loop can be absorbed into the condensate. Only the part of the loop within the cube still be a gapped excitations. They are the one-dimensional excitations in the XQ model. So in this way, we reproduce the physics of the XQ model. This particular type of loop condensation can be realized by adding this term into the X-cube Hamiltonian and tune the coupling to very large. So equivalently, this operation gives us, this operation frees the diagonal component of those tensors. So this means the X-cube model can be described by a holo rank 2 Z2 gauge theory without any diagonal component of those E tensor and A tensor. We can directly use this gauge theory and write down its Gauss law and gauge invariant tensors. And by this relation, we can write down the X term and Z term of the Z2 holo rank 2 gauge theory. And those terms are exactly the cubic term and the vertex term in the XQ model. So in this way, we can reproduce XQ model again. This means we complete this path by using the Higgs mechanism and the partial confinement transition. Now we go to the second path by partial confinement transition first. So this transition is induced by condensed monopoles in the U1 scalar charge theory, different from the previous one. In order to study the monopole condensation, we write down the action for the U1 rank 2 scalar charge theory. And this is the action. And we relax the Gauss law, the scalar charge Gauss law, into the action by multiplying to the scalar potential of the gauge field. And by following the standard procedure of particle vortex duality, we get a dual action of this scalar charge theory. So the dual action has the matter field, the dual charge, which is also the monopole. So the monopole is characterized by phase factor phi and the monopole number n. They are conjugate to each other. And this monopole is coupled to the dual gauge field alpha. And alpha has a relation with the original electric field in this way. And the dual gauge field alpha is conjugate with dual electric field beta. And there are two auxiliary fields, psi and theta. We can integrate out this psi to get the Gauss law for the monopole. And we can see the monopole is actually a vector charge. And by integrating out the field theta, we are able to get the traceless condition for the dual electric field, which means the dual electric field is actually the original magnetic gauge invariant tensor in the original scalar charge theory. So with those information, we notice there are two hopping terms for the magnetic monopoles in the scalar charge theory. And the first one is means that the monopole can move on the two-dimensional plane perpendicular to its vector's direction freely. And the second hopping term means that the monopole cannot hop along its vector's direction without creating other magnetic excitations. So this means the monopole is a two-dimensional excitation. They can condense on the two-dimensional plane, they move. By tuning this hopping coefficient very large, we can realize this monopole condensation. This equivalently heats the dual gauge field in a certain way. And this leads to the frozen of diagonal component of the original electric field. So in this way, we got the whole of U1 scalar charge theory by monopole condensation. A previous study shows that this theory is unstable to confinement, but we can still Higgs this theory down to Z2 to get a whole Z2 rank 2 scalar charge theory, which describes the XQ model we discussed before. Okay, in this way, I talk about the relation among these three circles, and I complete this triangle to give you the mechanisms for the fractal phases. Besides the mechanism of fractal phases, I also worked on the trying to find those fractal physics in a more realistic situation. For example, in this work, we found the subdimensional excitations live at the Lifshitz transition in a two-dimensional system. By impose the subsystem symmetry, we can stabilize this critical point to be a critical phase. And in this phase, there are also subdimensional excitations. And besides the fractal physics, I also worked on deconfined criticality. But in this work, I use boson vortex duality to study the phase diagrams of the spin half J1 J2 XXC model on the honeycomb lattice. In this work gives an explanation for the previous numerical result given the phase diagram of this model, and also gives supportive evidence for the phase transition to be deconfined criticality. I also worked on symmetry-enriched topological order, and recently I'm focused on the pseudo-criticality and try to understand the physics of complex CFTs with complex central charge and complex scaling dimensions. If you are interested in any of them, we can chat offline. And thank you for your attention.
We have some time for questions.
I see one connection to exciton Bose liquid.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that? How does your sub-dimensional excitation arise in exciton Bose liquid? Because excitons are bosons, so
yep.
They can undergo Bose condensation.
Yep. So
they support vortex excitation and anti-vortex. I'm trying to see a meaning to your fractal.
So
situation.
The subdimensional particle here in the exon Bose liquid is one dimensional particle. Only
water,
move.
Water.
So.
The constituent objects are excitons.
It's a little bit complicated setup. So we have, you can think in this way. So the system has bosons, and excitons formed by boson and hole, right? Boson hole pair form an exciton. By condense this pair, we can have
because there are many examples of exciton Bose liquids.
Mm-hmm.
They're experimentally accessible also, theoretically accessible. So I'm trying to see the meaning of your fractal in a known context.
In a what? In
no, I'm trying to see the meaning of your fractal excitations in a known context.
I see. So it's like some, how to say this? So we study this in a dual picture, actually. So we do the particle vortex duality for the axon both liquid. And then we can get the rank two gauge theory coupled to some kind of charge. And by analyzing those charge, which is the defect of original axon both liquid, we can know the charges are one-dimensional particles. So in this way, we can understand those sub-dimensional particle as defect of those topological defect.
The experiment is who deal with.
Well, that's hard.
No, because finally, you know, these exciting objects, like one third charge came from experiment, coupling positive particle.
Experiment.
So maybe you can give it experimentalist now. Okay.
I dimly remember reading something about fractals being found in graphene when it has topological defects. Does anyone else remember that, or have I just got my wires? I'm just googling for it now, so kind of.
I haven't. I'm not familiar.
So to define the third cone, what you need is you have a manifold and some tessellation of it. There's qubits on edges.
Mm-hmm.
And to define the X cube model, you need the cubic lab, right?
Yeah.
Is there like, so, because I know that Xie Chen
yes.
and collaborators, they have this structure
yeah.
with foliation. So
yeah.
is that the mathematical structure you need to define the X cube model, or is there?
That's the
define them, you know, in other cells?
That's the mathematical structure for the XQ model defined on a general manifold. Yes. And that means the model is topological. But that doesn't mean the model can be defined in continuum limit. Yes. That only answers the question if the model is topological or not. And on a different manifold, you can get different Gauss details.
A similar question could be, I don't know, posed for other fractal models, right?
Uh-huh.
The underlying mathematical structure which allows us to, you know, the qubit code is defined on the qubit lattice.
Yeah.
But can I consider some other, you know, cellulation of it to find a model which quality gives me?
I don't think current study has those results. Yeah, it's pretty hard for other model to have. So firstly, they don't have the couple layer construction. We don't know the relation between them with the normal topological order. And so it's hard to have such a structure. You can use the like foliation structure to define other models have the same structure. Like we can couple some double Simeon layers and whatever to get the same physics. But for the other existing model, we don't have the result.
First part of your talk.
Mm.
So when you tune this coupling to different 2D recode, but you so do you expect phase transition as a function of that? So you have H. That
I certainly expect phase transition, but
do you put the nature of phase transition?
No. It's very hard, and we also don't know if there's intermediate phase or not, and yeah, not alone to know the nature of criticality.
I have a question. So this is another interpretation where you gauge a subsystem symmetry. How does this relate to your coupled layer picture? Because you know, they have a similar flavor that you have this subsystem, each layer.
Yeah.
So they have a similar flavor, but is there like a direct connection between these pictures?
So I don't see any like obvious relation. But both of them, both of the procedure has the subsystem symmetry.
So the
engaged version.
Double layer one also has like a
engaged version.
Okay.
Yeah. Both of them has the subsystem symmetry. That's the crucial property of the fractal model, actually. Yeah. But like how to derive one from another is not clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on how DQFT fails to capture fractals?
Oh, because it has the subextensive Gwang's degeneracy. And the TQFT only works for the constant Gwang's degeneracy.
I see.
Yeah. That doesn't fit in that framework. And those like subdimensional particle on different line or different site, they belong to different topological sector. So there are a number of topological sector depends on the system size. So that's not in the normal TQFT.
I guess you could say those orders get washed out in the continuum limit.
In the continuum limit, it's not well defined. Because like when you do the coarse graining, you have more and more charges, more and more topological sector. That doesn't, naively, that doesn't make sense, right? But in the U1 fracton phase, the gapless mode is well defined in the continuum limit.
So you started with this Hall's model, then you left that, and then you went to XQ in detail.
Yes.
Is there any connection of that model with the rest, or it's standing alone?
The Haas cubic code has the has fracton, right? But
then you focus on XQ.
I focus on XQ model because Haas cubic code is very hard to study.
So it's another class on its own. Is that correct? Mathematically, it doesn't belong to this family. Much more complicated.
Oh yes, that's a type 2 model. So what I focus on is type 1 model.
Shane was advertising. That's super with Gamora Watts. You looked at Markov circuit for these models, and there's a very similar element between type 1 and type 2 models.
Like, oh, I see. In terms of
Markov. Yeah, to go from one to the other, you just kind of rearrange the underlying Markovs. Like, you just change the interactions of the Markovs a little bit. But
it works.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
I managed to find what I thought I remembered. It wasn't an experimental paper though, it was a theory one. It's called Fracton Elasticity Duality, and it's by Fretko and Radzikowski. You remember this one?
Yep.
And you work with these guys, don't you?
Yep.
Okay, so that I think is the answer to question.
So they have this mapping and they use this mapping actually relate the fracton physics to the lattice defect, because the lattice dislocation has like constraints on their motion, only move on one direction. So because of this similarity, then they related them to. But so here we consider the gauge theory, whatever. So they use the rank 2 gauge theory map onto the lattice elasticity, but they don't allow the monopole to proliferate. But here I always allow the monopole to proliferate. Yes. That's the difference.
Okay, what's the rank?